You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580, it's time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City joining us in the studio today. Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Ron. It's a great day to be here, and it's a great day to be in Traverse City because, boy, I tell you, this is one of those days that we love up here. Crystal clear air, and to top it off, I have Blue Angels going over my car on the way.
I've not been outside. Is it clear outside?
It is.
Clear sky?
Beautiful. Beautiful day. One of those days that everyone just loves. So I brought along with me today several people. First, we have Nathan Prout, who is our Director of Client Services.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Yeah. And then we also brought along Deanne Jennings, who's our Director of Operations. Good morning, Deanne.
Good morning, everyone, and good morning to our listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in this morning. We are excited, and I am revved because of the Blue Angels. Ooh. You know, driving here with the sunroof, and they're just flying right over, like Heidi was saying. It just gets me so excited.
Yeah, they're fascinating to watch. It's just mesmerizing.
They are.
So what's up today on the Prout Financial Design format?
Well, today we are going to talk about Social Security. The Social Security newsletter from Ed Slott came out, the June issue, and I thought it was very interesting because they are looking at mid-year frequently asked questions. And as I was reading through the article, I was like, wow, you know, I get asked that question. I get asked the next question and the next one. So I'm like, you know, obviously there are a lot of questions about Social Security because it can be very confusing. And even the updates that Social Security will issue sometimes add more confusion to an already complex issue. So I thought by going through this, maybe some of us can find answers to some of those uncertainties that you might have about Social Security. So we can just jump right in this morning, and I'm going to read the question that's in the article, and then we will talk about what the advice is. So this letter says, my clients often raise concerns about Social Security going broke and therefore may express a desire to claim as soon as possible, believing they might be protected from any further benefit cuts. What can be done to address this fear and the associated desire to claim earlier than they may have done if there wasn't that financial pressure on the Social Security Trust Fund? So this is a very common question. I'd say every week if I'm having a discussion with someone about Social Security, that comes into the discussion. It's been well documented and talked about in the media about that impending running out of the funds. And that's coming around 2032, 2033, given to who you talk about. So the Ed Slott newsletter, written by Heather Schreiber, says there's no chance that Social Security will ever totally run out of money. Even with trust fund reserves projected to become depleted in 2033, as of the latest report, ongoing revenue from payroll taxes, from current workers and employers, as well as income taxes collected on outgoing benefits and interest income will be enough to pay about 79% of promised benefits. So, for example, if you were receiving about $2,000 a month, that might be reduced to $1,600 a month. Now, in the past, Social Security has never missed paying expected monthly benefits. So even since it started back in 1940, it has continued to pay the expected benefits. And so there is something to be said for that track record.
This is so interesting because all you hear out there is panic, panic, panic. Social Security is going to end. So this is another point of view that I find fascinating.
Right. And so it is a big issue and it affects so many Americans mm-hmm. that we feel that eventually somebody is going to have to actually deal with this problem and this mm-hmm. issue and actually tackle some of the things. Now, the last time that they sort of tinkered with Social Security or made some changes was back in 1983. And in 1983, they gradually increased the full retirement age from 65 to 67. And that's why a lot of people retiring right now, their full retirement age may be 66 and 2 months or 66 and 10 months because they made a graduated scale. They also adopted the windfall elimination provision, and that is for non-covered pension recipients, and that was to reduce double dipping, getting Social Security and pension, government pensions. And then third, the taxation. They implemented taxation of Social Security and railroad retirement Tier 1 benefits for higher income. Now, also, I just want to say they have not changed that that table since 1983. So more and more people are falling into what they call Tier 1 higher income. It's becoming more common to fall into that bucket. So now we have in front of us about a 9-year window to make some action, to make some changes on Social Security. And the sooner that we do this, the less impactful those changes could be. So some of the suggestions that have been talked about out there is a bump in the 6.2 payroll tax or the income subject to this tax. So it is capped at how much income will be taxed for Social Security, so maybe they raise that cap. Or in addition, they could raise the percentage of the payroll tax. They may modify the benefit formula. That would be another way to do it. Maybe increase the full retirement age again like they did back in the 1980s. They could also raise the minimum age where someone could be eligible for Social Security. All these little tweaks could add years and decades on to the viability of the Social Security Trust. And so we'll have to see what comes. There's been a lot of discussion out there. We really don't know what Congress is going to do, so we'll have to stay tuned. But hopefully they will look at it over the next 9 years before it becomes a crisis.
So based on that, by saying we won't touch Social Security, if candidates say we won't touch Social Security, what they're essentially saying is they support lower Social Security benefits if they don't change it, right?
That is a way to look at it.
Yeah,
it's also like, I'm going to kick the problem down the road and let the next guy have to deal with it because it's too hot of an issue.
Yeah, and sometimes Congress doesn't act earlier than they have to on some of these changes. But also, too, of course, it points to the immense responsibility that is on retirees nowadays, too. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, Social Security was never designed to be all of your retirement income. Mm-hmm. But pensions used to be much more common with your employer as well. So as those have disappeared, more of the savings load is on you as the individual. So
that's right. We see in
Hooray.
I know, definitely have to plan ahead.
All right, so
have you seen any of your clients where they talk about with inflation, people are trying to trim their household budgets here and there, they're buying off brands or things. Have you seen any of your clients say, we're just going to put a little less into our retirement account right now? Have you seen any of that?
I've seen people putting in less into their retirement accounts, but I've also seen some retirees like cutting back on some of their expenses, like maybe the stuff that was there for the want list instead of the need list, sort of cutting back on some of that or taking longer to reach that goal. You know, say you like to go on a trip every 3 years, maybe you're going to add it's every 4 years now so that you have a little bit more time to save up for those expenditures.
But for the savers, 30, 40, 50-year-olds, say every month I put in this percent or this amount of money, and then you say my budget's really tight, I need to cut. Aren't you see anybody say, maybe I'll cut back on what I'm investing into my retirement account?
I have seen that.
See a little bit of that?
A little bit of that.
Just curious.
Most people who are savers, like we look at as savers, they're pretty dedicated to meeting their goal on that side. But in some circumstances, you know, that they're with the rise in prices, just to meet their daily expenses, they need to cut back in some areas. Mm-hmm. So, but don't stop. I would just caution everyone, don't stop putting into your retirement plans. If you have to reduce them, that is an option for you because you don't want to build up a lot of debt and pay those higher interest rates that are out there right now. So don't put yourself in that circumstance. But if you continue to put in, even if it's a reduced amount, that would be the best way to go forward if you're in that situation. So let's move on to our next question. It regards spousal benefits. So this question says, suppose a couple includes a spouse with little or no work history. When a worker spouse files for Social Security, does the dependent spouse collect 50% of the amount of the working spouse that they receive at the time of their claim? For example, if a wife files at age 62, does her non-working husband receive half of her age 62 Social Security benefit? So the question is by far one that tends to leave claimants and advisors even scratching their heads sometimes. So let's just give an actual example. Let's say we have Janet, whose full retirement age benefit at age 67 is $3,400 a month. And then we have our spouse, James, who stayed home with the kids to raise five children. That's a lot. The maximum spousal benefit James can collect is 50% of the $3,400 or $1,700 a month. But the trigger to James' ability to receive that spousal benefit is that Janet must claim her retirement benefit. So if the working spouse has not started their Social Security and the spouse wants to claim on their benefit as a spousal benefit, they can't do so. This is the law that is newer. We used to have other rules where you could file and suspend. That is no longer available to people. So people should be aware that the spouse who is wants to claim on their spouse's record will have to wait until that spouse actually.
If you're the non-working spouse, you don't get anything until your working spouse claims Social Security.
Exactly. Okay. That's what we're trying to say. So that's something to keep in mind, and that's another really common question that we will find in meetings people will ask us about. So moving right along, let's go to the next question. My former spouse is collecting Social Security disability benefits. Can I collect disability benefits under his record? I was married to him for over 10 years, and I am 61 years old. So a disability benefit can be claimed only if the claimant is deemed disabled. So you cannot claim disability benefits under your prior spouse's record. So if it's the spouse that is disabled, you can't get a disability benefit. Because you are not the person who is disabled.
You don't get disability unless you're disabled.
Exactly.
What a weird idea.
What
right?
a cool, I know. What a mean rule.
But you're married. Share everything.
So I thought that was a good answer for that one. Now, this one really made me sad, this next question. You just feel really bad for this person. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read through it, and then we'll talk about it. So I went through, this is the letter, I went through a divorce last November from my second spouse. I was collecting dependent spousal benefits, which I assumed would continue post-divorce. However, shortly after the divorce was final, I received a letter from Social Security stating that I was no longer entitled to those benefits. The letter went on to say that I owed benefits that had been paid to me since the divorce. My attorney never brought this up. As we discussed the terms of the settlement, it was never raised. We both assumed the benefits would continue. I was married for 9.5 years, and now I'm told I need to be married for 10 years for my payments to continue. Can you confirm the Social Security's request to repay the benefits? Is that accurate? So unfortunately, the writer says, I can confirm that the Social Security Administration's request for payback follows the rules. After a divorce, meeting the 10-year milestone of marriage is critical. Had your marriage lasted 10 years longer, your income benefits would have continued uninterrupted. So we've talked about this on the show. That 10 years is 10 years. Mm-hmm. And if she was married for 9.5 years, she just would have had to delay the mm-hmm. actual divorce for 6 months. Right. And then she would have been entitled to that benefit. And that was very valuable to her. And that was just a huge overlook. Mm-hmm. And so when you are getting divorced, you want to check all these different areas. Check pensions, check Social Security, check these things to make sure that you are not making a move that would impair those future payments to yourself.
I would say get an attorney who specializes in that area, because didn't you said she had an attorney that was an oversight.
It said they both assumed that she would get it. And it's like, and we talk about this on the show, you need to have experts in every area. You know, you need to have an attorney expert. You should have a financial expert. You know, make sure you cover all your bases.
Yeah, and it's not pleasant, of course, to deal with divorce, but we have counseled clients through that process too, or even worked with their attorneys as far as what language should go into the divorce decree, even when it comes to splitting up assets and all the other parts of that major life change.
Right. And with something so important, let's just not assume, let's know. Mm-hmm. Let's ask the questions, get a second opinion, just make sure that you're thinking through. If you don't know for sure, check it
when
out.
You interview your attorney, say, do you make assumptions about the law?
Do you know about the 10-year rule?
Or do you do the research?
Security?
So one comment from somebody on the text line says, we have paid that money into Social Security. It's our money that they were to invest, not steal, and give back to us to supplement us in retirement.
Well, yes.
Yes, that was the idea of the program.
Yes.
But yeah, and they didn't. Congress didn't keep up with our changing demographics either, as lifespans expanded and that they never changed the rules to go along with that.
I think that big pot of money was just very, very, you know, it really attracted a lot of attention that way. And
Yeah, so we're going to get into estimated quarterly tax payments. So
everyone's favorite subject.
Hooray! Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, who has to do estimated quarterly payments?
Oh, we'll get there.
Okay.
So what's going on is penalties on underpayments of taxes have surged recently. So second quarter amounts are due, or were due, I should say, June 17th. So affected taxpayers need to act right away. This group includes many investors, retirees, business owners, and gig workers who aren't employees, and some others who are. So it could cover everybody. For example, Two earner couples or staffers with stock options could also owe penalties if they aren't withholding enough. So the average estimated tax penalty in fiscal year 2023 climbed to about $500 from about $150 in 2022, according to IRS data. Meanwhile, the number of affected tax filers rose to 14 million people from 12 million people in the prior year. Overall, the agency assessed $7 billion in estimated tax penalties in 2023.
They seem like they're doing pretty good, the IRS, there.
Yeah, nearly four times the $1.8 billion that was assessed in 2022. Wow. And a key reason for this increase is higher interest rates. According to an IRS spokesman, although the total includes some pandemic delay catch-ups. To see why rates matter, remember that ever since Congress expanded the income tax during World War II, employees have had to pay most of their income tax through paycheck withholding or face penalties. To prevent gaming of the system by non-employees, the law requires filers with other taxable income, such as from investments or self-employment, to make estimated tax payments each quarter. So filers who don't pay in enough tax throughout the year owe a penalty in the form of an interest charge on their underpayment that's sent quarterly. In 2021, the year that prompted most of the 2022 assessments, the IRS's rate on underpayments was a rock-bottom 3%. The penalty is based on the short-term treasury rate, plus 3 points, and it climbed to 6% as rates rose in 2022. That pushed up charges on underpayments assessed the next year. In 2023, the rate rose to 8% for the fourth quarter. It's still there, so underpayment penalties will continue to sting taxpayers who owe them. One filer already on the alert for 2024 is George Young, a retired actuary living in Maine. He was surprised when his tax prep program showed $166 for estimated tax penalties for 2023, although he had made large payments to avoid them. Part of the penalty can come from timing mismatches, as he received investment income throughout the year but didn't make estimated tax payments until the fourth quarter. So the bad news for taxpayers trying to avoid underpayment penalty is that they're complex.
Yeah, so, and, you know, it's so frustrating here with timing mismatches, because sometimes you don't know what you're going to do, or you don't know you're going to have this big income thing coming at the later of the year, and trying to do that timing is frustrating, and making estimated payments is, you know, it's just another thing you have to remember. But what were you going to say?
I was going to say, so what you're saying is the IRS says to some filers, you need to estimate your earnings and estimate the tax penalty and send that to us on a quarterly basis. But if your estimate is incorrect, you're penalized?
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. And you have to pay interest, so.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's just amazing. It's like, hey, you guys are all amateurs. You're busy. You're working. You have families. You're trying to earn money and do things. And estimate, kind of get an idea of what you think you'll make, and then estimate what you think you'll owe and send it to us on time. And if you don't, if you're wrong, you have to pay a penalty.
I know.
Or potentially go to jail.
Yeah, it's like
it's wild. Wild,
they
yeah.
stack the deck against you, isn't it? It's yeah. like, wait, you can't win for losing. So. Wow.
And it reminds me of our conversation even with John Sluice a couple weeks ago, too. We were talking about the potential for a flat tax in the U.S., like yeah. if that ever were to happen. Because, yes, the government knows what you owe. They expect it from you, and they expect you to do all these calculations correctly. And it's like, why can't you just do this automatically? But, of course, that gets into a lot of other issues that also deal with, I don't know, maybe TurboTax lobbying other people, too. Hypothetically. So, the bad news, as we were saying, is it's complex. The good news is it's often possible to sidestep these penalties by making savvy use of the tax rules. So here's what to know. So taxpayers who owe $1,000 or more normally must pay 90% of their tax bill long before the April 15th due date. For employees, the deadline is year end, and for those with other taxable income, the deadline is when fourth quarter payments are due, typically January 15th. If the taxpayers don't pay the 90% and aren't protected by so-called safe harbors described below, they can owe a penalty that's an interest charge on the underpayment. The rate is set and published quarterly by the IRS. Currently, it's 8%. So making a payment to the IRS at any point can reduce this interest, so filers facing these charges can save by making payments before their April 15th due date. So the dangers of safe harbors. Taxpayers are usually aware of safe harbors that protect against estimated tax penalties. They're available to filers who pay the IRS 100% of their prior year tax by the year end or January 15th deadline if their adjusted gross income is $150,000 or less. Taxpayers earning more must pay 110% of their prior year tax to qualify.
So they're expecting you to make more, so they're adding that 10%, it looks like.
Exactly. And beware, these safe harbors apply per quarter, not per year. So if someone has income in the second quarter but doesn't pay the safe harbor amount until the third or fourth quarter, underpayment penalties could apply. So the IRS's computers can impose undeserved penalties on some estimated tax filers because they automatically treat income as though it's earned equally throughout the year. So hypothetically, if a filer does a fourth quarter Roth IRA conversion and pays tax on it at that time, the system will assume the income was earned all through the year, but the tax was only paid in the fourth quarter.
Interesting.
And that's the bucket I fell into because I did a Roth conversion last year and I sort of messed up some of my estimates there and I was off. Not a huge amount, but I did get a nice reminder that I need to.
We do like to practice what we preach every once in a while. So I know we hit heavy on these Roth conversions. But. So the way to tackle this dilemma is to file IRS Form 2210 and Schedule AI, which tells the IRS in what quarter's income was earned and taxes were paid. DIY filers with uneven income should check whether their software can handle both of the forms, as some programs can't. The agency will often waive estimated tax penalties for filers who recently retired after reaching age 62 or became disabled, and it will also waive penalties for others who show reasonable cause. To request a waiver, file an abbreviated form 2210 using the form's instructions. So the last part of this is really how your withholding can save you. So many taxpayers, especially retirees, have income that qualifies for withholding when it's paid, as well as income subject to estimated taxes. Pensions, withdrawals from traditional IRAs and similar retirement plans, Social Security payments, and bonuses all qualify for withholding. This income has a terrific benefit. The law considers withholding on it to have come in evenly throughout the year, no matter when it actually was paid. So if an investor owes $5,000 of tax on investment income for the first quarter and then withholds an extra $5,000 on a December IRA withdrawal that covers the tax, that could avoid an estimated tax penalty on the first quarter income.
And this is something that I have worked with clients on. I have some clients where they are still have some other income coming in, and they have to take their RMD, their required minimum distribution, because they're older and they are in that category. And we have taken the entire RMD and just used it as withholding and sent it right into the IRS. And that has helped them cover some of these pitfalls with the quarterly payments and estimates.
Yeah, and just like Heidi was getting at it, it's usually a little more difficult for pensions or Social Security to move quickly on changes to your withholding. But at your IRA custodians, whether that be Fidelity or Schwab or LPL, we can make those changes very, very quickly. And then the last point really is states additionally often have penalties on underpayments of estimated income taxes. If your state is one, beware of rising interest rates and find out where you stand.
Well, that was very cheery news for all of us, and I'm sure we're all going to make sure that we get our estimated tax payments in now.
All right, so we'll move along with stats. Is that good
yes.
with everybody?
Next on the agenda.
Through June 20th, the S&P 500 hit 52-week highs on 8 of 13 trading days in June. At the sector level, communication services and technology are the only two to hit 52-week highs in June, and most sectors haven't hit 52-week highs in at least 2 months, and that source is Bespoke. The price-to-sales ratio of the S&P 500 technology sector rose to an eye-popping 9.8 times as of June 18th, which is more than 3 times its average reading of 3.2 times since 1990, and more than 2 points higher than its dot-com bubble high of 7.5% made on March 24th, 2000, and that source is Bloomberg.
So that's a lot of that AI interest out there, mm-hmm. and some of those companies involved in the AR sector are driving some of that.
So, interesting. Yeah. I thought it was AI, but that's good. Thank you, Heidi. As of June 18th, the 30 largest stocks in the S&P 500 had a combined index weighting of roughly 53%. 25 years ago, in June 1999, near the peak of the dot-com bubble, the 30 largest S&P 500 stocks made up 42% of the index. Just 10 of the 30 largest stocks now were also in the top 30 back then, and that source is Bespoke. So I'm seeing a common theme of bringing up dot-com bubble here with these stats, and we were talking about early in the show, it's a theme on the news lately. Heidi, can you just explain the dot-com bubble and why they're comparing it?
Right, that was back in the 2002-2003 era and right after Y2K. And during that time is when the internet was really taking form and getting going. And a lot of companies would set up a company, .com, at the end, and they didn't necessarily have a product or they didn't necessarily have a plan for how that website or how to monetize it. So a lot of money went into these, and then they went out of business, became defunct because there wasn't a lot of stuff backing them. There was a decline in the market across the board, and so we call that the dot-com bubble. It sort of burst, and everybody realized, maybe we have to make money, not just have a website. So that's very generalization of things. But that's what they're referring to. Mm-hmm. And one reason we hear this a lot right now is because when things go on in the economy, people are always looking for something in the past to relate to, mm-hmm. so that you can understand the things that are going on. And the thing right now that most closely aligns with some of the numbers that we're seeing is that dot-com era. It's not exact, not the same thing as going on, but that's why a lot of times they'll harken back, because it's sort of similar, mm-hmm. Stats might have developed during that period.
Interesting. Thank you, Heidi. Mm-hmm. As a sign of weakening in the housing market due to higher rates, the two categories of the official monthly retail sales report that saw the biggest year-over-year declines in May were building materials, -4.3%, and furniture, -6.8%. And that source is U.S. Census Bureau. The average interest rate on a used car in Q4 2023 was 11.9%.
Wow.
And my husband and I recently have gone used car shopping, so I can guarantee this stat.
Wow.
But it's varied widely based on credit scores. While the average interest rate for a super prime rated borrower, like 780 plus credit score, was just 7.7%, average rates for near-prime borrowers, 600 to 660 score, was 14.1%,
no.
while subprime borrowers, 500 to 600 score, faced an average rate of 18.9%.
Wow. And that really
source
hurts.
Is Associated Press.
1980s.
Yeah.
It is high interest for sure. And tonight's matchup between Biden and Trump will be the earliest presidential debate ever held. Before this cycle, the earliest debate was the first of two between Carter and Reagan on September 21st, 1980. And that source is Wikipedia. So tonight is the night.
Theoretically, neither one of these guys might be running, will be the nominees. They've not been nominated by their parties yet.
They haven't had
the nominating convention.
I know.
Which is sort of surprising because that's not following the usual timetable that we're all like used to. And
yeah.
I thought you were going to say theoretically neither of them will be awake by then.
I know when they said the earliest, I was thinking time wise in the day, not like the date.
Yeah, right.
They go to bed early.
That's like they asked, what movie was it? They asked one of the candidates in the Miss USA contest. What's your favorite date? No, I forget. Don't forget it. I have to look that up.
We're moving on here. So we have a few minutes, I think. So we're going to go back to our Social Security article. There was one on here that was interesting, I will say. So I'm going to read that question. And it said, I recently heard that more than one ex-spouse and a current spouse can simultaneously claim on one working spouse's record. For example, if a person is married three times, each marriage lasting over that 10-year mark, and is now on spouse number four for the last 2 years, could all three former spouses and the current spouse claim benefits under this person's record? So theoretically, these five people could be collecting on one record. The working spouse, who is not great at picking spouses, three former spouses and the current spouse, for the former spouses to be entitled to claim the ex-spousal benefit, the working spouse must be at least 62 years old, and each of their benefits must produce a smaller benefit than the one that they can claim under their own working record. If the working spouse is not already collecting benefits, the divorce must have occurred at least 2 years prior to any of them claiming for their benefit. Lucky spouse number four would be able to claim a spousal benefit if the working spouse is currently collecting their retirement benefit and the spousal benefit is higher than number four's retirement benefit. So if the stars were aligned so that all five were entitled to benefits under this one working person, none would be reduced based on what the others received. Divorced spouses are not included in calculating maximums with only one working spouse. And number four, collecting the family maximum would not apply to the two of them either. So that is pretty crazy that you can have one person and have five people claiming benefits.
All right, we're going to get ready to wrap up with Prout Financial Design, New Retirement Radio. I did find the clip. It was from the movie Miss Congeniality when one of the contestants is being interviewed and is asked this question here.
All right, let's hear it.
Describe your perfect date.
That's a tough one. I'd have to say April 25th, because it's not too hot, not too cold. All you need is a light jacket.
That's awesome. Very good.
That's great. That.
All right. We'll repeat, as always, 9 to 10, Prout Financial Design, New Retirement Radio here, live Thursdays, except 4th of July next week. Thursday will be a rerun of last year's 4th of July. A special patriotic salute from Prout Financial Design.
Yes, indeed.
All right. It is 10:56. Fox News just ahead. Thank you, Heidi Cartwright, Nathan Prout, and Deanne Jennings.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.